griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought to die. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought-and-died keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Now, I am recording this on July the 1st, and that is, of course, Canada's Dominion Day. Now, it's today called Canada Day, and this was part of the Trudeau Revolution, begun actually by Trudeau Sr., and this was Trudeau Sr., to change this country. Part of the change was a massive demographic replacement. White people, basically, being replaced by massive year after year third world immigration, so that Canada was in 1960 roughly 98% white, now is 78% white, with all reasonable projections suggesting that the European founding settler people will be a minority by 2050, if not before. Now, that's what current immigration levels are. It's a simple matter of projection. Anyway, a part of this change was to get away from our traditions. Now, Dominion of Canada. Why was it called Dominion Day? Well, our national motto is actually a quotation. Oh my gosh, my heart is about to go into cardiac arrest, from the Bible. Ooh, yeah, that's the Christian Bible, actually. And it says that I shall give you dominion from sea unto sea, from sea unto sea and to the great river. What that means is that there's a special sense of stewardship. I'll give you dominion, that is rule. Not to rape and destroy, but to manage. The words are really reminiscent of the geography that is Canada. From the Great River might be seen as the St. Lawrence, from sea unto sea, from the Atlantic to the Pacific. That's our country. And so we were called a dominion, kind of a religious overtone. And hence, it was Dominion Day. Why would Trudeau change it? Well, anything to try to downplay our European traditions. And so I put this up on Facebook. I am allowed, at least temporarily, back on Facebook. and on Twitter and Gab. And on the cafe websites, that's cafe.nfshost.com. And anywhere else I can circulate it. Happy Dominion Day. Oh yes, and on Dominion Day, I prefer the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. The present anthem, Oh Canada, really sounds like a funeral dirge. Oh Canada, our home and native land, true patriots love in all our sons. Oh, wait, it's not sons anymore, is it? In fact, the cultural Marxists have changed the words of O Canada so often over the past 20 years. I'm sure not one in 100 persons actually is up to date on the current version. And you have to kind of wonder about the vitality of a country that is constantly changing its anthem. You know, an anthem is supposed to be something solid, traditional, what you remember from your childhood and your children will remember. It's something that unites. If it's something that's changing every day, like your underwear, it just doesn't have the same impact. Well, on a anyway, on a more serious level, well, it is serious, but on the 26th of June, our Minister of Public Safety, Ralph Goodale, he's an old, wily old politician from Saskatchewan. He's the last elected Liberal, federal Liberal in that province. But anyway, he added two names to Canada's terrorist list. And those were the white identity groups, Blood and Honor and Combat 18. And I put out a statement strongly condemning this as trivializing terrorism and really basically criminalizing dissent. Canada's leading free speech advocacy group, that is of course the Canadian Association for Free Expression, slammed the Canadian government's recent decision to ban two white rights groups, Blood and Honor and Combat 18, as terrorist groups, making membership in them illegal from now on. Ralph Goodale, the Minister of Public Safety, is playing fast and loose with the term terrorism and is trivializing a real terrorist threat, the real terrorist threats that do exist. Blood and Honor, beyond a few street-level punch-ups, has acted as a public and group identity organization, political and group identity organization in Canada. For several years, they had a clubhouse on the outskirts of Calgary and held music at Maintenance and musical concerts. To group them with ISIS and Boko Haram is really obscene. The 1985 Canadian Security and Intelligence Service Act. You know, this is Goodale is either playing fast and loose or he is a fool. The Canadian Security Intelligence Service Act defines threats to national security and therefore what constitutes terrorism.
And it's very specific. It reads in part, threats to national security are activities within or relating to Canada directed toward or in support of the threat or use of serious of acts of serious violence against persons or property for the purpose of achieving a political, religious, or ideological objective within Canada or a foreign state. And the then goes on to add, lest there be no misunderstanding, that this does not include lawful advocacy, protest, or dissent. Now, that's kind of important. Now, there are other things that constitute threats to national security, but they don't apply here. The activities directed by a foreign country. Oh, he said, wouldn't that be maybe outfits like B'nai B'rith? The Jewish, anyway, we're not talking about that. Or sabotage and espionage, but again, we're not talking about that. Actually, the government made it quite clear that it's the beliefs or ideology of blood and honor, not violent actions, that have earned it the terrorist tag. And a few days ago, the National Post reported the banning of Blood and Honor, an international neo-Nazi network whose ideology is derived from the National Socialist Doctrine of Nazi Germany, according to Public Safety Canada's website. Goodale, the group has a presence in various places across the country. And he said the government, the government has been examining how to respond to white supremacist groups over the past couple of years. So it's ideology. It's not terrorism. And this is really very important. Because what they are doing is, make it quite clear, they're criminalizing dissent. They're criminalizing an ideology, not violence. So clearly the target is an ideology. And this is, you know, is I argue, quite serious. Perhaps not surprising. I'm not surprised at this latest high-handed move. This is the same Ralph Goodale who misnamed the 43,000 plus illegals his government has allowed to pour into the into this country since late 2016. He's mislabeled them as irregular migrants. It all sounds a little vague, but no, they're not illegal. Irregulars are criminals. You can't solve a problem, I'd argue, if you can't name it. The Trudeau government really is morally lost. It promotes a culture of death. To be a Liberal MP or candidate, you must be a supporter of abortion, which is murder. Two summers ago, many Christian groups were denied youth employment grants, that's their taxpayers' money, for humanitarian projects because their religious beliefs oppose abortion. The present government has an obsession with promoting and indulging the LGBTQ sexual fringe. It's not surprising that a government that gave ex-terrorist Omar Khadr $10.5 million and now welcomes home former ISIS terrorists can't get national security right. The government is actually panicking, in part because of the widespread protests and opposition to its failed immigration and border security policy. I've mentioned this notion before, but I think there's really something to it. If you can't get the little basics right, you know, when you go wrong on those, bigger decisions or more complicated decisions will go wrong too. For instance, let's not mince words about it.
abortion is killing, and what is removed isn't a hangnail or a wart. It's a creature. It's a human being. So abortion is murder. Is it ever justified? Well, that's another question. But let's not play games. But according to Trudeau, it's an inalienable woman's right. And I saw an interesting cartoon recently, or meme, and what it said was, the argument that abortion, a woman should have the right to abortion and control of her body, if she had control of her body, she wouldn't need an abortion. And there's kind of something to that. Anyway, this the government can't get it right on that. The government, of course, can't get it right about sex. Now, this started in a previous liberal regime when we legalized same-sex marriage. Most people, regardless of religion, Christians with the odd fringe exception, Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims, even many Jews, and most secular people, conceive of marriage as a man and a woman. Not two men, not two women, not a man and a goat, or a man and a sheep, or a woman and a swan. It's a man and woman. And a family is based around a man and a woman, and their children, and the extended family of the grandparents, and maybe new grandchildren, and so on. Now, this isn't hard, but when you can't get that right, other things fall. Perhaps it's then not too surprising that we can't get the border right. Well, I should say Trudeau can't. These people, seeing a loophole, and that's kind of a different question, but a loophole could be easily shut in an interpretation of the law, have lost control of our border, with a border crossing called the Roxham Road in southern Quebec. Illegals pour across, and instead of being stopped by the RCMP, the RCMP helped them with their usually pretty upscale luggage. This has been going on since late 2016. Now, that's 2017, 2018, 2.5 years, you kind of ask, well, why didn't, I mean, is the border really open? Yeah. Well, why not build a fence? That doesn't work, build a wall. If that seriously doesn't work, mine the place. Why? Well, because the Trudeau government is hung up on wild support for refugees, regardless of whether they're really refugees. I mean, there are ways people can apply for refugee status. And so the border is insecure. And I argue that follows from being morally lost. And they are lost. Now, on the other hand, and I don't deny there's such a thing as terrorism. I'm not somebody who says that I don't believe it. There's anything like called terrorism. I do believe that. But meanwhile, the government ignores the actions of assorted anarchist and Antifa or anti-fascist groups. Now, there's a group, an anarchist group in Montreal that has repeatedly vandalized and damaged a construction of a project they don't like. Antifa at Yellow Vest rallies in a number of cities across Canada, particularly Toronto and Ottawa, have attacked Yellow Vest protesters, including stabbing in Hamilton a 72-year-old disabled veteran who was in a wheelchair. Now, Does this rise to the level of terrorism? Well, there is some wiggle room, I suppose. Terrorism speaks of serious acts of violence. So is this really just street-level lawlessness? It should be the purview of the national of the local police? Perhaps so. But I suggest that the federal government ought to be looking at that type of thing. Those are threats, at least threats to public order. And in many cases, they are really somewhat out of control. here's a real obscenity, but then, of course, a part of the clash between cultural Marxism and common sense. And this is from the United States, and she comes from Fidesz. Left-wing blue check journalists support attack that put Andy NGO No, it's Vietnamese, in hospital with brain bleed. Portland's mayor refuses to protect journalists, the public, from Antifa rioters. As we reported yesterday, freelance journalist Andy NGO was attacked and beaten by an Antifa rally he was covering. As a result, he was hospitalized with a brain hemorrhage. Here are some of the verified by Twitter journalists, etc., who approve of this. Charlotte Clymer, she has the LGBT flag beside her. Andy Ngo intentionally provokes people on the left to drive his content. Being attacked today on video taken by a natural journalist is the greatest thing that could have happened to his career. You know it, I know it, he knows it, we all know it. So he got beaten. And you know, anytime your head is hit, there's a big risk. And Nathaniel Friedman, don't think he's Irish. It's not that I disagree with Andy. No, he's not doing anything that we need to protect. And no, he has the right to walk around and not be beaten. Andy Mataris, no, isn't a journalist, dumbass. Well, whether he is or isn't. My milkshake PEX, I'm sorry, I'm not there to support you as you fight Nazis and milkshake Andy No. That milkshake means throw milkshake at him, but they threw more than that. Gregory McKelvey, how many fascist blogs do you have to post to recall the journalist asking for an Andy No? Soulcom, the political movement and ideology Andy No capes for actually kills people. Fuck if I care about some bruises and scrapes. Nathan Bernard, Andy No has raised almost $100,000 on his GoFundMe, ends up normalizing fascist propaganda and provoking Antifa until they punch you in, is pretty lucrative. What do you mean by your mere presence as a reporter? You provoke the psycho Antifa to beat you? And there are other commentaries in the same vein. And the report goes on to say Twitter refuses to ban Antifa accounts who plan their riots on the platform. For example, hashtag Rose City Antifa, hashtag NYC or New York City Antifa, hashtag Kitty Stryker with a Y, hashtag Antifash Gordon, hashtag Antifa JLM, hashtag Philly Antifa, and the list of this. Interesting, though, of course, we're also in a war with the censors at Facebook, who of course, it's not really about hate on the internet. It's really not about anything like that. It's all about thought control and censorship. And once you understand that, you're
a long way along the road to real wisdom. Let's see what we have. Lots of more interesting things for y'all. And here's a really interesting thought piece by a good friend of mine, a journalist, and his name is a thinker, Tim Murray. He lives out in British Columbia. Canada Day is not a celebration of Canada, but a celebration of ruthless cosmopolitanism and the destruction of our heritage. It's a scene duplicated across Canada. The weather is sunny and hot. The expansive field is dense with people clapping, cheering, and singing to the performances on stage. Giant speakers broadcast music at ear-splitting decibels. The music originally emanated from other continents and other nations. Reggae, rap, Andean, rock and roll, you name it. Interesting, though, isn't it? Yeah. Not necessarily our music. Actually, Canada Day is a misnomer. It's more like disunited Nations Day. We are encouraged to celebrate every culture but our own, because we don't have a culture, do we? Or so we are told by Trudeau. Yet at the same time, we are told that diversity is our culture. That is, if we have a culture, it's just a mosaic of imported cultures. Apart from artistic or Aboriginal presentations, Canada Day is largely the expression of differences, not of our own making. Differences which allegedly unite us, right? Not so fast. The official narrative that there is unity in diversity has been contradicted by a myriad of studies kickstarted by Harvard's Robert Putnam, whose foundational study appeared nearly two decades ago. The consensus of the studies is that diversity diminishes civic trust and participation, a consequence that, among other things, makes electors less willing to vote for redistributive policies. Why? Because they see it going to other groups. People are hesitant to share their wealth with people who are very much unlike themselves. The welfare state was originally constructed by ethnically homogeneous societies, but in a multi-ethnic environment, this project is rendered more difficult. The late Nobel Prize-winning economist Milton Friedman once maintained that a nation can have mass immigration or a welfare state, but not both. By the same token, a good case can be made that ultimately multi-ethnic fragmentation and welfare state are mutually exclusive. Moreover, there's a clear trend among large cities in Europe and North America of voluntary resegregation. Ethnic minorities are voluntarily clustering in urban pockets, a conspicuous corroboration of Putnam's observation that people of all ethnicities prefer to, in his words, bowl alone and hunker down. Determined efforts to integrate fail because they run counter to human nature. As moral psychologist Jonathan Haidt noted, we evolved as a species of tribes. Tribalism allowed us to create large societies and to come together in order to compete with others. That brought us out of the jungle and out of small groups. At some level, then, tribalism is baked into most people's mental wiring. According to Haidt, and that's H-A-I-D-T, not Haidt, this is just a basic aspect of human social cognition. Successful integration is conditional on modest immigration levels. But in a nation with the highest or second highest per capita immigration intake in the world, integration seems less likely, particularly when 90% of immigrants are drawn from non-traditional sources. That is, and half the population of the cities that receive them are themselves foreign-born residents. The more dissimilar they are to us, the more difficult, of course, it's going to be to integrate them. At this rate of demographic change, mass immigration and multiculturalism become a combustible mix. The notion that a pluribus unum, the U.S. model from one for many, will be the end result of this transformation is both fanciful and intellectually dishonest. The irony is that while the core culture of host countries is being eviscerated in the name of diversity, global mass migration on an epic scale has done much to homogenize global culture. The diversity of sovereign nations is giving way to a borderless world of sameness. For some, this is a blessing, but for others, it's a nightmare, and the gap between them is widening. If, for instance, I'm in Tokyo, and it's obviously very different from the United States or Canada. Now, on the other hand, almost everywhere you go, at least in downtown Tokyo, you see all sorts of international labels. There's Kentucky Fried Chicken, there's a Burger King, there's Starbucks, there's McDonald's, and so on. A global culture. Which isn't necessarily good. Tim Murray goes on to say, it's a schism that's overshadowed the traditional left-right polarity. The great divide, as Australian academic Catherine Betts termed it 20 years ago, is no longer about left versus right, but about globalists versus nationalists. For Betts, the battle was between the new class, the coalition of the intelligentsia, mainstream media, and the growth lobby, and the subordinate class of ordinary people who have little to say in the construction of immigration policy or in much of anything else. Other analysts have tendered similar characterizations. Psychologist Jonathan Haidt describes the division as one between those who feel rooted in their own town, community, and nation, and those, on the other hand, who are less parochial and more averse to nation states and borders. I prefer British writer David Goodhart's labels. As he portrays it, the new Civil War pits the somewheres against the anywheres. The former are rooted nationalists and traditional. They're the somewheres. You're proud to be a Southerner, or you're proud to be a Newfoundland, or proud to be, in a more general sense, Canadian. So the somewheres are rooted nationalist and traditional, and understandably resentful of being at the receiving end of an immigration policy designed to replace them and imposed without their input or consent. That's very crucial. Like in Canada, we've never had a full-range debate on immigration and open to the public. All the public, not just so-called stakeholders. And stakeholders is a very sneaky misnomer. You might imagine when you hear the term stakeholder that means you, but it doesn't. If you're a traditionalist, the only people who are really stakeholders are people who support the system. For instance, immigration lawyers, of course, some religious groups, social workers, various ethnic groups, greedy businessmen who are looking for cheap labor. If you happen to say, well, I don't think we should have endless growth, well, you shut up. You're not a stakeholder. In contrast to the somewheres, those are true rooted traditional people, are the anywheres. They are more educated, progressive, and mobile, and are apt to look upon somewheres as ignorant, stupid, and nostalgic for a past that never was or can be again. It's funny how people are accused of longing for a past that never was, but it was, you remember it. It's a kind of condescension which ordinary people in the West have come to expect from those who claim to know better. And of course, the people who claim to know better have notoriously delivered a disaster. Sadly, the anywheres, these pretentious self-proclaimed sophisticates who consider themselves citizens of the world, and I first heard that term back in the early 80s from a man named Maurice Strong, who was a dangerous, greedy, self-serving internationalist, who styled himself as a businessman, but more often than not, simply
used government contacts,
or actually got pricey government jobs to do various things. In fact, he was introduced, and I'll always remember this, he was introduced at a futures conference. He's one of the speakers. It was a futurology sort of study of, you know, what the future might bring. And he was introduced as a speaker in a small seminar. And he was introduced, and Maurice Strong is a Canadian who has done this and this and this and that. And he pompously, when he got up to speak, well, he says, I must correct the kind words of introduction. I am not a Canadian. I'm a citizen of the world. Yeah, anyway. So the anywheres are style themselves as citizens of the world. And they've commandeered the classrooms, editorial rooms, boardrooms, and cabinet rooms of the nation. It is their vision of Canada, not ours, that has been thrust upon us. It's a vision that reminds, that finds full expression in the manner of which Canada Day is celebrated and embraced by an entire generation of indoctrinated college graduates, amply represented in the festivities. These millennials know little of what Canada once was, or how it came to be, or that it was shaped by two French and English speak founding people, their religion and values. They do not understand that a citizen of anywhere is a citizen of nowhere. The anywheres are really gypsies, cut loose from the heritage and moral moorings of their ancestors, who settled and built this exemplary country. Canada Day is not a celebration of Canada, but a celebration of ruthless cosmopolitanism and the destruction of our heritage. That's a very tough opinion piece by Tim Murray. Tough, perhaps, but absolutely bang on about what the changes that have been inflicted upon us. And it's something, of course, that we are battling back against. I'm just trying to call something up here. Oh, yes, here. I'm not quite sure why we are having trouble. I am no fan of Facebook, and it's my most fervent hope that in the next few years it will be broken up as a monopoly, and or that it be compelled to serve all people, all subscribers. But we're free subscribers, and we're not because they want to do us any favors, but because they need lots of people who provide their advertisers with who are the raw material for the advertisers that Facebook sells. But anyway, Facebook will violate French users' privacy, and they'll be a snitch for the French state censors. Facebook will provide addresses of hate message writers to French justice. And this is from a conservative site in France. I really like it. Collabos and Renega. So they're calling Facebook collaborators, and they are in state repression and renegades. A step has just been taken by the French government in the fight against hate online. According to the Secretary of State for Digital, Facebook has agreed to deliver to French justice the IP addresses of hate message writers. So they are going to find out who you are and come after you, thanks to Facebook. And a lot of people, both left and right, have had some problems with what they see as violations of privacy by Facebook. The social network has just made a specific decision in France. According to Secretary of State Cédric O, Facebook has agreed to provide the French justice IP addresses of hate messages on its network. Secretary of State welcomes this huge news, he said.
They told us that they would transmit the IP addresses to the hate content online. This would be requested by the justice, he explains. And this is quoted in the French newspaper, Le Figaro. It's a step towards specific to France, according to Cédric O. It will allow the judicial process to proceed normally. Facebook used to deliver IP addresses to the courts only in cases involving terrorism and child pornography. Now this cooperation extends to hate online. Yeah, you probably have the same problem with this I do. And yes, exactly. What is hate? Well, hate is whatever they say it is. So if they say, this is a hate post, good old Mark Zuckerberg will happily deliver your IP address to the French authorities. I guess if you're French. This is a further black mark on Facebook. And one more thing. Someday there's going to be a reckoning. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on ResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take my musical break now, and I hope you like some of these tunes. Pick up another one by Merle Haggard. And this is actually, I'm sorry, I'll skip that one. This is a very gorgeous blonde lady. Great voice. She's among other things, a mandolin player. Her name's Rhonda Vincent, and this is.
Good grammar and spelling are important, but if you want to write essays that inspire,
grass grows on me.
1996 copyright Ganaway Productions Inc. under license from Ganaway Productions Limited. All rights reserved. This program is not associated with the Grand Ole Opry, WSM Inc. or Opryland USA Inc.
I don't think this is the song I wanted. Sometimes we do have. We're going to try it again with Rhonda Vincent. Yes, when the grass grows over.
When you left, I thought that I would soon be over you. Even tell myself that I'd find somebody to. Thank you.
Clips are great, but to see where Country Legacy lives in full episodes, go to countryroad.tv.
Now here's a song by Rhonda Vincent and
recorded it in a bluegrass version of Mama Tribe. So, yeah, it just, in fact, released, I think, today. So.
We'll lay it on us.
I would be happy to.
Rhonda Vincent.
Freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound. No one could change my mind, but Mama tried. One and only rebel child from a family meek and mild. My mama seemed to know what lay in store. Despite all my Sunday learning, towards the van I kept on turning, till Mama couldn't hold me anymore. I turned 21 in prison, doing a life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. And that leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried. Left my mom a heavy load. She tried so very hard to fill his shoes. Working hours without rest, wanting me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried. Trying to raise me better, but her pleading I denied, and that leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried.
That is one of the most identifiable guitar licks in the history of country music that Jimmy Capps just played. Ben, since you played guitar, played that on Merle's original record?
Roy Nichols, I believe.
Roy played it?
Yeah.
Up that
Now, what are we doing now?
Yeah, we're just going to... I don't know. What should we do? You know, this is... Billy Yates, are you here? Billy Yates? Billy's coming, I think, later. But we can't start jostling these around, no, depending on which writer's here, can we? Yeah, we'll just go ahead and do with that. That's fine. See, you know, when we do our show, like tomorrow at 3 o'clock, the Rage and I will be doing bluegrass music down in the sports complex downtown. And Hunter will drop his bow like that. I hope it doesn't break.
You know, when we do shows together, and I'm sure some of you folks have been out to our shows when we do shows together, well, boy, I just love to watch the Rage, you know, work. And these folks, they are naturally players. I mean, they do it. Then me and my band go up there and work, and these guys are over there on the side of the stage doing this. But I mean, we run in slow motion beside you. But anyway, we're catching up, and I think we've settled in on what we're going to do here.
I say tomorrow, we never know. They may not even know what the song is when we kick it off. So.
Yeah, folks, I'm on my way to Wisconsin tomorrow, and I'm not responsible for what she does.
Well, let's do a Billy Yates song. One, you brought this to us, one called Alone Together Tonight.
This is Paul Fromm, you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to sign off for the the anthem of the real Canada, Amique Lee Forever. Happy Canada, Dominion Day.